right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Hello there and good evening. Firstly, big thanks to Demi and Mikey for taking us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, October 15th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7, Paul Corry reflects on Ireland's uninspiring win against Armenia. Damien Lawler has the latest GAA news. Ellen Keane chats to Irish rower Mags Cremin. And we'll round up today's sports headlines, including squad announcements for both the Ireland men's rugby team and the Ireland women's football team. If you want to have your say on any of the above, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087-187-9200 or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Hello there, good evening, welcome along to the show. It is great to have your company. Let's dive into some news headlines first up and some squad announcements that I mentioned in that intro. Jess Zhu and Jamie Finn are back in the Ireland Women's National Team squad after long injury-enforced absences, but Carla Ward will be without goalkeeper Courtney Brosnan for the UEFA Nations League promotion relegation playoff against Belgium. Everton keeper Brosnan has been sidelined with a knee injury, while Megan Connolly and Leanne Kiernan are also absent as they continue to recover from foot injuries. Leicester City goalkeeper Katie Keane earns a second senior call-up, and though there's no League of Ireland representation in the squad, Shamrock Rovers defender Maria Reynolds and Athlone Town striker Kelly Brady have both been invited to train with the team. Centre-half Anna Patton is suspended for the first leg, which takes place at Aviva Stadium on Friday, October 24th. Ireland then play away in Leuven the following Tuesday, and you can hear live commentary of both legs here on 2FM's Game On. Meanwhile, assistant head coach Alan Mahon says the plan is in place if Carla Ward has to miss the upcoming promotion relegation playoff against Belgium. Ward was absent from today's press conference at Tala Stadium due to what the FAI describe as a family emergency. A spokesperson for the association said they will wait and see how Ward's situation unfolds, with Mahon stepping into full media duties. And Alan Mahon was speaking to our own Tony O'Donoghue earlier this afternoon.
Alan, first of all, an Irish team without Courtney Brosnan, that doesn't happen very often. So, I mean, how big a loss will she be?
Yeah, listen, of course, she's a big loss, big character in and around the dressing room, but on the pitch, leads by example. So, yeah, it's going to be a big loss. But we've got a decent squad, we've got good backups. We've got, obviously, Grace and Sophie, which are capable and ready. So, yeah, it's one of those. It's football that happens, but we'll have to just get on with it and kind of make sure we're prepared right.
Megan Connolly as well. I mean, she's someone that has been ever-present in squads over the last number of years.
Yeah, now listen, when you lose big players, it's always difficult. But our job is to make sure, no matter who we put out, it's going to be right. And to be honest, obviously it is a big loss, but we'll have to crack on. And with the players that we have, we're confident enough anyway that we should be able to get across.
And if you have to go into the coaching role, do you think you'll be up for that? Do you think...
Which one?
If you're going to have to take up the role of head coach for the week?
Fine. The players will drive it. Like I said, nothing changes. Obviously, the way we've worked it, nothing will change. The plan's in place. We just have to make sure we execute it. But yeah, it's no change, to be honest.
Assistant head coach Alan Mahon speaking to our soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue there. In rugby news, Caelan Dorris is on track to make his return for Ireland next month after being included in Andy Farrell's 34-man squad for their meeting with the All Blacks in Chicago, as well as the Autumn Nations Series games. Dorris will captain the group, which is due to travel to America next Tuesday for an extended camp before their meeting with the All Blacks at Soldier Field on Saturday, November 1st. Farrell, who returns the Irish job after his sabbatical with the Lions, has won uncapped player included in the squad, with Leinster's Paddy McCarthy drafted in. In addition to the 34-man squad, Connacht wing Shane Bolton and Munster pair Brian Gleeson and Edwin Adogbo will both travel to Chicago with the group as cover.
Game on.
Association football.
Now, Paul Corry and Ellen Keane are with us. We are going to dive into our association football chat in detail very shortly. But Paul Corry, you were at the Aviva Stadium last night. Ireland's World Cup hopes are still alive. Were you enthused leaving the stadium?
Oh, I feel like I need a big exhale before I start this sentence, Shane. I don't know what to make of last night. There's not a huge amount of positive outside of the fact that we picked up 3 points. Strange setup, strange performance, and a strange feeling around the ground in general.
Throughout the night?
Yeah, there was. Like the national anthems, there was a huge number of empty seats, and I don't think people had much expectation heading into last night, but probably expected a better performance than what we got. The only saving grace is the fact that we got 3 points, and Armenia, you know, the sending off really changed the game. And in fairness, we created a couple of chances in that period of time. But yeah, it's hard to know where we are at with this side and with this manager.
Well, we will pick your brain on where we are at very shortly. Ellen Keane, you were speaking to Irish Roar Max Kremen. We're going to hear that interview a little bit later. You were also on the show last week speaking about Shane Ryan's retirement from competitive swimming. Since then, it has been in the news that Shane Ryan is going to compete in the Enhanced Games, which is a competition which permits use of performance-enhancing drugs under medical supervision. So Shane Ryan, retired Irish Olympian, he has said he's motivated by financial opportunity and by wanting to see what his body is capable of. Now, it is very important to point out, Sport Ireland, Swim Ireland, WADA and other bodies have strongly criticised both the Enhanced Games as a concept and indeed Shane Ryan's choice. Concerns raised include health risks, fairness, legacy, type of message to younger athletes, loss of institutional support and funding, and the structure of the event. So in your opinion, as someone who has swam competitively for Ireland as well, what message does Shane Ryan's decision send to young athletes, both in Ireland and indeed globally?
It's just deeply disappointing, to be honest. I think it's a weird move, and I had spoken before about like retirement and what a hard period in your life retirement is. And as he said in his interviews, like, he's invested so much and crafted this skill, so that's why he wants to do this, because he wants to see what is possible. But I just think he had such a great legacy, and leaning into glamorizing performance and enhancing drugs just for kind of the paycheck is really disappointing, and it's dangerous. And whenever there is a big paycheck or there's something on the line, especially in sport, there's always going to be cheaters. So that's why there are people doping at the Olympics, and that's what he keeps going on about. But when you look at this Enhanced Games, like, there's $1 million on the line. So although the performance enhancing drugs are being taken in a controlled manner, people are going to start realizing that maybe they're not in shape that they thought they would be, and maybe that's when cheating will start happening, and that's when things can go really badly wrong. So I don't know, it's disappointing, and I think the whole swim community is really disappointed.
How will it impact his legacy in traditional swimming?
I think it's already impacted it. I think Swim Ireland said it, WADA said it, Sport Ireland said it. It's not a good move, and it's not a message that you want to give to kids, that this is kind of the easy option to take. And I think there's so much merit in committing to sport in the traditional sense and working hard and the human spirit that's involved in achieving things that you might think are impossible. And that's what's so amazing about my interview with Mags later on, is that that's what she talks about. She talks about the community, and she talks about it's not all about winning medals and succeeding. It's actually about the journey and the family that you create along the way. So it's just really disappointing to see.
As someone who has devoted so much of your life to competition, is there a fear that public perception of sport may change if events like the Enhanced Games become more common or more athletes sign up? Will spectators care more about performance and more about the spectacle than the purity of competition?
I don't know. Like, I can understand how it is entertaining. That's what it is. It's entertaining, and Shane has said that himself. It's not traditional swimming anymore. It's an entertainment side of things. So people will tune in because they're curious. But I don't think people who actually love sport will respect this. I think it's going to be a fad. I don't think it's going to last very long, and I think it's just a little bit cheap and tacky at the end of the day, because people respect hard work, and people, if there's no hard work being put in and it's just kind of the easy option, I don't think it's going to last.
Okay, thank you for your contribution on that. We will hear from yourself and Max Cremin a little bit later. We're going to chat Rome because it's a brilliant story about Max Cremin and, of course, a recent world champion. And Paul Curry, you're still with us to continue our association football chat before we discuss more of last night's match. Let's hear from two Ireland players, Festi Ebiseli and Ryan Manning. They were speaking with Adrian Eames.
Ryan, I guess it's one of those ones. It's never mind the quality of the display. It's about the result.
Yeah, I think no matter what happened tonight, we had to get 3 points. So you could have won 10-0 or 1-0. It's 3 points at the end of the day. So, yeah, we were delighted to get 3 points.
In a way, it's a shame that Ireland couldn't add to the one goal, because goal difference could prove ultimately decisive.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that. But I think the aim for this camp was to take it to the next camp and take each game as it comes. So, you know, we had to get 3 points tonight to take it to the Portugal game and then hopefully the Hungary game. So, you know, it just leaves it all to play for next month.
You picked up a yellow card that rules you out of Portugal. How frustrating is that?
Yeah, look, really frustrating. I think it's just difficulty of two yellow cards in games. It's suspension. It's obviously the competition, the way it works. But I think we've got a really talented squad, a load of boys there ready, chomping at the bit for an opportunity. So, you know, I'm sure whoever the manager picks will step in and do really well.
Went agonisingly close in Lisbon on Saturday night to getting something out of that game against Portugal. They come to town in a few weeks' time, as you say, and it's a game Ireland have to get something from now.
Yeah, look, I think Ireland probably in the past have had big games where people come to town and they have to get something, and somehow with Irish people and the crowd and the team and the atmosphere that we can create here, it's something that we nearly have done in the past and hopefully can do in the future. So yeah, we'll put together a game plan. Obviously the superstars are going to rock up and we'll hopefully have the Aviva rocking and put a bit of pressure on them.
So Portugal at home, Hungary away, all in the space of a few days next month. Do you think we can get that second spot?
Yeah, look, I think we obviously have to take the Portugal game as it comes and obviously get a bit of luck in that game to take something for ourselves, or else get a bit of luck in Armenia and then shoot out then between us and Hungary and Armenia for that second spot. But you know, I think there's been loads of positives from sort of all the games this campaign, probably besides the Armenian one. But I think we've put together some good displays of football. You know, the 90 minutes in Portugal was nearly a brilliant away performance from an Irish team. So we know we can do that, and we just have to try and build on it. And obviously we have to get something, so the onus is on us.
Festi, I guess it was all about getting the win, and you did that. It wasn't perhaps the greatest game to watch, but in terms of the points, that's what it was all about, wasn't it?
Yeah, we came here with a target to get 3 points, and that's what we did. Sometimes football is ugly. Sometimes it doesn't go your way all the time, but as long as you get the win, that's what was important for us tonight.
Crowd tonight were super as well, weren't they?
Yeah, it's always like that. It's always like having an extra man with these guys in the Aviva. They're always lifting our spirits, so it was very good to have them.
You probably haven't had a chance to pour over the table in terms of Group F, but obviously you'll be aware that Hungary got a late equalising goal against Portugal, so it is very, very tight for that push for second place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tight, but we just need to take every game as it comes. So we've got Portugal next. We need to get a good result, and then we go from there.
And that is going to be a huge occasion next month, the 13th of November. The atmosphere here will be absolutely crackling when Ronaldo and Portugal come to town, won't it? It'll be some occasion.
Yeah, it will be a big occasion, but we'll have the fans behind us and we'll be able to do something special, hopefully.
And obviously confidence will be lifted by that result tonight going into the Portugal game. So that's going to be, you know, beneficial as well, isn't it?
Yeah, getting a win is always a boost of confidence. So we'll have that going into the next game.
Paul, there seems to be a glass half full outlook from both Hamer Halgrimsson and indeed, as you've heard there, from some of the Irish players, Festi Ebiseli and Ryan Manning speaking to Adrian Eames. What positives or progress can we take from this international window, so both last night and indeed the defeat in Portugal?
Well, if you take the Portuguese game first, Shane, it's much easier to set your team up when you're going up against a powerhouse like Portugal. You know exactly what to expect. We're going to have our two banks, our back five, and then our four midfielders, and we're going to defend the 18-yard box with everything that we have. We can force the ball wide and, you know, crosses go into the 18-yard box. You've got your likes of Jacob Ryan, Nathan Collins and Darryl Shea, who can then go and attack it. We didn't offer very much going forward. I don't think we had a shot on target that night. We knew what to expect. I think the expectations then have to shift when you move into the Armenia game, that we're going to have a little bit more of the ball. We're going to impose ourselves on this Armenian team, and we're going to, you know, eradicate the errors that we made in Yerevan that time around. And that didn't happen. So it's very hard to analyse the two games and say that a huge amount went right outside of kind of the heart, effort and grit that the team showed while they're in Lisbon. Now, looking back at last night, he did try to warn us in advance of this game that he would have taken a scrappy 1-0 win. that was his message to say, I'm going to go with five at the back. We're going to keep it really tight. We're going to ensure that we keep a clean sheet. And we're going to try nick one at the top end of the pitch, whether it be through a moment of magic or a set piece. And it astonished me, because looking at the game in the first half, Shane, the real problem that you have when you play five at the back against Armenia is their one centre forward was occupying our three centre backs. Now, what that means is when we're in possession of the ball, you are affording Armenia two extra men. So it's very hard to initiate a press. It's very hard for a Malumbi or Smallbone to get tied to an Armenian player because they always have that out ball. And as the half wore on, Armenia pushed us back and back and back, and they had the freedom of Lansdowne Road last night. And that's not something you can really afford to do. Like, really what should happen in that situation is one of our centre halves should push on into midfield, engage, push Smallbone or Ebiseli further up, or Azaz close to Evan Ferguson, and try turn possession over either high up the pitch or anywhere within the park. And we didn't do that. And it was very frustrating, because any time we did initiate any sort of a press, Armenia showed that they weren't capable of really playing out from the back. There was one or two opportunities I can recall in the first half where we did turn over possession. Finn Azaz had one or two opportunities where he could have slid Evan Ferguson in. And if you set up in such a way whereby there's a trigger, there's a press, we all go together as a unit, you can turn over possession and make Armenia look very ordinary, and they are a very ordinary side. So the performance last night was, you know, yes, you can criticise individual players, but a lot of that, Shane, comes from the setup from the manager. And when he picks five defenders and three centre halves, he's sending a message to that team that we want to try contain and make sure that we don't concede or cause any errors like they did in Yerevan.
Were nerves a factor in this must-win game? And like when Hamer even references it, like nerves, they were too passive. Does that suggest a mentality problem, or is it communication with the manager, or what do you put the flaws down to?
I think there is nerves in the squad, because we haven't had a huge amount of good days, particularly at home, with this group of players. But there's a fragility, I think, particularly with Nathan Collins and Dara O'Shea. This probably goes back to the Armenia game, whereby they don't want... Like, really, last night, you should be engaging 1v1, matching up with Armenia and saying, OK, we're going to press and let's see if you're good enough to play against us. Our centre-halves, and in particular Collins and O'Shea, don't want that situation, because they feel as if they haven't got the legs if he comes a foot race in behind. So what happens in that situation is you drop deeper and you try look for a bit of insurance or security and get bodies around you to try, you know, nullify that space. So it prevents us from really squeezing up the pitch, and that's a problem. That is a real problem, because we end up dropping deeper and deeper and deeper. So there's definitely a lack of confidence in those two players that they can't squeeze the game up too high, because one ball in behind can make them look very ordinary and can really highlight the lack of power, the lack of pace that we have in those two players. I think Jake O'Brien's okay. I've watched Jake O'Brien for Everton a couple of times. He plays as a right full against tricky, quick players. He can match and he can recover. I don't think the other two can. And that almost seeps into the rest of the players, that we need to drop deep. We don't want to press up the pitch, and it becomes a very long night. So you can certainly see that there's elements and there's areas of the pitch where we are lacking confidence. I almost feel for some of the forward players, for the likes of a Smallbone and Azaz, who want to get on the ball. Because any time we turned over possession, a lot of the time we were in a flat back five on the edge of our 18-yard box. You look up, you've only got Evan Ferguson. You haven't got a huge amount of options. Our only out ball last night was Ebiseli, who really got us up the pitch. I didn't think there was any major quality to what he did, but he does offer that sort of pace and power in behind. So it was a very, very long 45 minutes. And to be honest with you, up until the red card, like, they had a really good chance, probably around the 40th minute, you know, that volley. That goal goes in, that becomes a very, very different night. And we've been blessed with the two red cards. If it wasn't for them, we might be sitting on 1 or 0 points within this group.
Yeah, not ideal when your captain throws the head in and gets his marching orders for Armenia. Broader picture, has the Hamer-Halgrimsson era shown any signs of real progress compared with the Stephen Kenny period, or are the same issues just still persisting?
Yeah, we were more full of hope, I think, heading into this group campaign, and that wasn't, you know, based off nothing. It was based on the performances that we had, you know, against Bulgaria. And I know that's nothing to get too excited about. I even actually thought that the friendly against Senegal, we showed signs of a setup and a formation that we somewhat knew what we were going to do in and out of possession of the ball. It's very hard when you look at this group in particular to know what setup we have or what we are. We're not exactly a very difficult team to play against. We don't cause teams problems in wide areas getting the ball into the box or threatening in behind with blistering pace. So it's very hard to make sense of what Hamer's building towards or what he's looking to.
Is he still trying to figure out what imprint he wants?
Well, you'd have to say yes. And on the basis of that, Shane, is Malumbi, Ebiseli and Coleman weren't in the last month's squads. Mm. So how can you go from not being involved in the squad to starting
and being a key
two
player.
Games and being key personnel within that period? I think leaving Coleman out of the last window, he's been very vocal in his press or in his post-match interview in Portugal, was a massive mistake, because it worries me that at 37 years of age, Seamus Coleman is the only one who seems to bring that sort of aggression and intensity to a play that others are feeding off. There doesn't seem to be that character within the squad. Malumbi shows it in spades, and I've been critical of Malumbi in previous windows. I actually think he's maybe one who came out with a little bit of credit over the two games.
He was getting criticised online for fist pumping late on when he won the quarter. Yeah.
He was like a man who won a free in the Munster hurling semi-final.
Is that not the energy we want to see from the players?
Like, what I couldn't get over, Shane, is when we scored them at 1-0 up, right, their keepers pulled off a couple of worldies, like unbelievable saves in the second half that maybe extends our lead. We were 1-0 up, and for the last 10-15 minutes, we should have been thinking goal difference is going to be important in this group if Hungary get beaten by Portugal. We should have been going at Armenia for a second and a third and trying to, you know, bridge that gap between ourselves and Hungary. We sat back against a 10-man Armenia team. There was opportunities.
Took it to the corner at one stage.
There was opportunities. If you recall, Ryan Manning with the ball into Adam Ida that we very nearly scored from, that wasn't any bit of ingenuity. It wasn't any major invention. It was like one or two decent passes to open up a 10-man Armenian side that created opportunities. Another team would have taken them to the cleaners when they went down to 10 men. We should have scored more goals last night, and that sort of mentality of protecting what we have against 10-man Armenia worries me. And actually what worried me, Shane, on top of that, is how long it took Hamer to change it.
Yeah,
when they went down to 10 minutes, when they went down to 10 men, he took 10 minutes to make a change. We did not need three centre-halves on the pitch at that moment of time. It was calling out for a Chidoze Ogbene or Mikey Johnson or Troy Parrott to come on at that period of time to try open it up. And in fairness, we got the goal. And in fairness to Evan Ferguson, he has put numbers on the board in this qualifying campaign with very, very little service. That's maybe another positive you have. But, you know, there's no hope, I don't think, that we're going to be able to just cough up the points in the last two games. Like, there's no signs of us within this group.
Mathematically possible, but at the moment, the signs would point to the fact
Hungary would beat Armenia. Hungary would beat Armenia in Yerevan, and that would be us.
Yeah, and Hungary's late equaliser certainly didn't help last night. Paul Carr, we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thank you for your contribution.
I'm kind of glad. I feel like I was venting there.
No, it's realism. It's, you know, you have to be real about...
I'll be full of hope come November.
There's no point, is there? Right, we're taking a short ad break. We're chatting Gaelic Games with Damien Lawler next.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, Damien Lawler joins us with the latest Gaelic Games stories. And Damien, let us begin our conversation on the National Games Development Committee, because they are launching a new coach education scheme. What is the situation here?
Yeah, Shane, I mean, at the moment anyway, I think the latest thing on the Games Development Committee's desk is a new awards programme whereby they look at coaches from under seven, you know, the All-Star scheme as well, underage, primary schools, clubs, nurseries, Go Games, all the way up through juvenile and up through adult as well. And I think it's a recognition now that coaching is at the heartbeat of the association. And I'll talk about the awards programme in a second, but it does come on the back of a bid by the GEA to get more funding for games development. And while there was an additional €750,000 put into the growth of hurling in non-traditional areas, and while inter-county players' grants rose considerably as well, Shane, there's still a feeling among those in games development that, you know, more funding or more resources should be required or would be required. And the government support for grassroots GEA and games development is back to about 3.4 million. That was reduced a few years ago. So they're back to where they would have been about pre-2019. But they're putting in about €14 million themselves. And they feel that they're like almost seen as self-sufficient to the outside world. And I suppose they're looking on at other sports, maybe getting increased facilities or funding for it. And they feel that they should be getting a bigger slice of the pie. So anyway, I suppose, going to be a re-engagement with government units over the next few months to see if anything can be done with that in the future. And interestingly enough, then as well, just as a side plot, the committee are looking at maybe the question of coaches in general as it goes further up the ladder. They're looking at the concept of coach eligibility, you know, both in the short term or the long term, and they're trying to see can they link the same type of restrictions to coaches as players. In other words, Shane, that there would be some level of restriction on whether you could coach clubs that are not your own. And interestingly enough, then, the Amateur Status Committee that I mentioned on last week's show, they're also exploring this. So I wonder, could you see a motion to Congress or actually a proposal coming through to Central Council in the very, very near future, you know, almost restricting clubs from going for outside coaches and maybe trying to get them to look from within? That would certainly keep expenses and overheads down for sure. But for now, there's a light being shone by this Coach Education Awards program. There's a light being shone on all those people who have been out since January, getting players out, honing skills, building their strength and conditioning. For now, people will stop training or they'll go indoors, but all these coaches will go back and re-educate themselves with kind of a online program, Shane. And the chairperson of the Games Development Committee is Micheál Martin, and he's telling me lately about the new coach education scheme and what it involves.
Well, Damien, I think recognition is important no matter what aspect of the association you're involved with, from the All-Stars to the McNamee Awards and so on. It's something we do really well as an association. This is the first time we're trying to recognise the most important people in many ways, the grassroots coaches across all the various genres, from our All-Star inclusion programmes to our teachers, both primary and secondary school, who do tremendous work, and to the club coaches and our talent academies as well. Games development covers such a wide variety of spaces, and we felt it was important to recognise, to seek examples of good practice from around the country. We're looking a little bit different. A lot of these recognition schemes would have dinners and so on. This will be something where we'll actually come to the coaches. So when we recognise, or when these people are selected, we'll come to the clubs. The prizes we have are things like goalposts for clubs and kits and so on. Something that is really practical and would be popular both with the coach and with the group that they're working with. And I say, we've just finished the club season. Underage club seasons are coming to a close in the next few weeks, and there'll then be a period of coach education. So these people who have spent the year coaching, both from nursery all the way up through our child and youth sector and indeed into the adult sectors, a lot of these people don't take the winter off. They're attending courses, and it's something that we are very cognizant of in terms of even where we're going with our coach education pathway and trying to build a hybrid system of online and in-person learning. So there's a huge amount of good work happening. This scheme is just the start of recognising the people that are doing really good work. And there are thousands and thousands of them. And I think in a general sense, they do get recognised on a daily basis and are appreciated. The scheme is maybe just to heighten that awareness.
This isn't something that's going to change overnight. Are there any immediate concerns that people listening in here from the GA community should have?
No, not in the immediate term, no. I think there are concerns that the volunteer is being stretched like never before. Now, this is not just in GEA, but it's in other sports as well. And I think there is a fear, as Jarlett Burns warned in Congress last week, basically the expense and the overheads that face clubs and county boards going through the roof. He warned that radical proposals will be brought through after Christmas. And I think maybe coach restriction is one of those, but it's going to have to be maybe done in phases, I'd say, Shane, because to be honest with you, like I think that they will start with maybe major superpowers whereby there's huge membership and no excuse for not getting coaches from within. But smaller clubs with smaller memberships would probably have a problem with it. We're certainly on the way, but I think it's two-pronged. The coaching volunteer at the moment in every sport, I think, has been stretched like never before. There's a multi-sport domain out there where kids are playing absolutely everything. Parents are lending a hand to a lot of sports. And then thirdly, at a higher level, the cost of the whole thing, it's getting very, very worrying, and I think that's why they're looking at it.
Okay, one certainly to keep an eye on. Now, Austin O'Malley outlined a few of the big performances in county finals over the weekend on Monday's show, but there were also some seismic shocks, some brilliant stories from around the country that definitely we should mention. Talk to me about Laois, because Cortwood have risen from the junior ranks to contest their first senior football final against Neighbours Point Harlington, and it went to a replay, Damien.
Yeah, it's going to a replay now, a draw last week, and I think the growth of Cortwood has been phenomenal, really. They were into intermediate there around 2018, and they've got up. But traditionally, Shane would have been a small club, small maybe junior club even, but they hadn't been in the senior semi-final since around, I'd say, 1976 or something like that. But it's been a historic run to this year's senior county final. Drew with Port Arlington last week. But they've had continued success, you know, at underage. There's an amalgamation there as well. They had a Division 7 victory too, Shane. And I think maybe what's really leading this is minor and under 20 success, maybe with the amalgamation with Emo as well, underage county championships too. The name Byron is synonymous with that club. Obviously, Fergal Byron was a legendary goalkeeper for Laois and Frank Corporal, but his son Matthew now is the goalkeeper and has been for a number of years. Matthew's been well marked out as a goalkeeper for a long, long time now, but he's absolutely shooting the lights out. He scored 5 points in the final. In the semi-final, he fired over 8 points. He's absolutely nailing frees. I think he just missed one free all day long in the semi-final. And, you know, Mark Bates is the manager of the team. It's a very, very young side brought through, but there's a couple of veterans there as well. But just, you know, they beat Port Laois along the way. It's a serious, serious journey for them this year. That said, Port Arlington, they're very, very hard to beat as well, Shane. But it's just one of a number of stories on the club circuit that deserves mention.
Listen, staying in Leinster as well, there was also an amazing story in Longford.
Yeah, you know, Mick Quinn's club, Killo Amidog, they completed actually a clean sweep of county titles at last weekend. They won the county senior title, they won the county junior title, and they won the county junior C football title as well. So I think in the senior title then, Roland McGoldrick got in for the winning point. Just like he did in 2023. Interestingly, Shane, that was the club's 15th time to lift the Conley Cup, and Killo have never been beaten in a Longford senior final. So that's fair going for them. And it's the likes of Mickey Quinn leading the way there, you know, playing centre-back, calling all the shots. But it's a really, really good success story for that club. 3 county titles in one weekend. They don't grow on trees.
They certainly don't. Just one other bit of club news today. 3-time Ulster champions Schlochneil have exited the Derry Championship after their appeal against their semi-final defeat to Newbridge was unsuccessful. So Schlochneil lodged an appeal against the result. However, that proved unsuccessful, and it is understood the club will not be pursuing the matter further. Reigning Derry champions Newbridge will face Maher Felt in Sunday's Derry decider, the latter having overcome the 2023-24 All-Ireland champions Glen in the other semi-final. So that does relate to a score that was given as a one-pointer, that there were protests that the All-Star Shane McGuigan had kicked the ball from outside the arc. The full story on the RT Sport website. Let us end our conversation, Damien, on hurling, and unsurprisingly, Kildare dominating the Joe McDonagh Team of the Year.
Yeah, if you said that to me 12 months ago, Shane, I was raised. You know, I mean, they struggled even to win a game in the competition up to this year, and they had, you know, 3 or 4 shots at it. But this time now, they've got 7 on the Joe Mac Team of the Year, and including 2 brothers, Ryan Bourne and Keen Bourne, who were instrumental for Naas winning a 7 in a row in the county title stakes in Kildare last weekend by beating Maynooth. And David Qualter missed out in that game, but he's the competition's top scorer. He gets in there at wing forward as well. But also the likes of Simon Lacey is in there, cornerback. And James Burke is in there too. James Burke is a dual player, Shane. He had an unbelievable Joe McDonagh Cup final, and then in nearly almost the last play of the game, you could see that he hurt his leg. And unfortunately for James, it was an ACL damage. But he's well on the road back to that now. And he was one of 7 Kildare players, including Jack Sheridan, who got 5-7 in the competition overall and 1-4 in the final. Jack had an unbelievable effort and goal saved by Carl Dunn from Laois. Maybe save of the season in many ways, and Carl Dunn gets the number one spot there as well. So, yeah, unbelievable progress there for Kildare hurling. See that they got 7 on that team. Again, 12 months ago, you just would not have seen this.
Brilliant stuff, Damien. There's more from Damien on Sunday, actually. You're on the back of the box Cork hurling final.
Yeah, we were down in Thurles last weekend, Shane, covering the Tipp semi-final. But what a game we have on Sunday. We're on air at 3 o'clock on RT2. Sarsfields against Middleton in the Cork senior hurling final. You know, traditionally, it would have gone out to those games to watch. You might get 15,000 people at those games. But I think there'll be a massive crowd at it. And I'm expecting a really, really tight game. So look, it's absolutely brilliant to be going down to that.
Brilliant. Do tune in for that one. The RT Player and RT2 Television. For now, Damien Lawler, thanks so much for taking the call.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, Ellen Keane is still with us, and we're going to hear shortly from Mags Cremin, because last month Mags Cremin and Fintan McCarthy teamed up in the mixed double sculls at the World Rowing Championships. The pair secured gold, becoming the first ever world champions in this event. What a year it's been for Mags. Graduated UCC earlier this year after 7 years, world championship medal, making the step up from lightweight to heavyweight. What an athlete.
What an athlete. Yeah, she's just... the fact that she's able to come back this season, having found out that the lightweight double sculls, which she traditionally and historically has competed in at the past two Olympics, is no longer in the programme. She's come back this season and has just embraced it, embraced finding a new event. She's now training in the double sculls for LA in 28 and then having a bit of fun. And that's what sport is all about. So she's really enjoying it. And embracing being around the team and being around some really great athletes who motivate her, and being able to find her motivation again this year is really, really exciting. So we had a great chat and I can't wait for everyone to hear it.
Well, let's hear your conversation with the one and only Mags Cremin.
On the RTE radio app, this is 2FM's Game On.
How are things since being crowned world champion alongside your teammate Fintan McCarthy? Just over 2 weeks ago, is it now?
Yeah, just over 2 weeks ago now. Oh no, it was just such a great experience, to be fair. Like I mean, we didn't really know what to expect going into it because it had never been raced before. The mixed double, it was the first time it had ever been raced at a world championship. So we really didn't know like whether we were going to be fast or what. You know, we only got into the boat the day before the race, so for the first time. So like, do you know, that kind of way, I suppose, because I was racing in a double, women's double with Zoe Hyde, and Fintan was racing in a men's double with Philip Doyle. And, you know, that was our priority. So this was kind of just a novelty, really, and just like a bit of fun that turned into us winning gold. So it was gas, but we really enjoyed it and just the whole experience.
How did you decide, like, how and when did you decide you were going to do this together?
I suppose like we have trials every month at the National Rowing Centre, and I suppose we saw it on the calendar and just thought like, oh, you know, would we give it a go? Like, do you know what I mean? I suppose we've never doubled up in an event at the World Championships, but it was like obviously after our own events had finished. So we were kind of like, do you know, would we give it a go kind of thing? Fiona was in the single that morning as well. So, you know, she wasn't going to be in the mixed double. So therefore I was in the mixed double. So it was just kind of funny. And yeah, that kind of, we were like, oh, why not? Like, you know, we were kind of like, we weren't sure where we were going to be absolutely wrecked after our events, like our normal events. But I think just like the vibes and the, you know, just the excitement of it kind of kept us going, really, like, you know.
So like, it was kind of the mindset of, what do we have to lose here?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think like Fintan and I, like, do you know, like we had no idea, like, do you know, because obviously we never rode together, but I think like two of us are just so similar in the way, like we're just absolute demons when it comes to racing. Like, do you know, like we knew if all failed, like we just force it down the course, do you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
So we kind of knew we'd be a good match that way, do you know?
Yeah.
There wasn't... just love racing, like.
There wasn't a chance that you two weren't going to like try your hardest to make that podium.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, we just love racing, like we love fighting, like, you know, in a race, like, you know, that kind of way. So that's kind of two qualities that we both have. So we knew it was kind of, yeah, that it was going to be good that way. So yeah, it was just so much fun, really, like, you know. And I think, although like, you know, it was a novelty event kind of thing, you know, everyone did kind of take it seriously in the moment, like all the other countries, you know, that kind of way. And I suppose we had the heat that morning and we won that. So we knew we were kind of like quite good or whatever. But we were just absolutely buzzing when we got back to the hotel. We only had 3 hours between the heat and the final. So we went back to the hotel to rest and just try to switch off. But we were absolutely buzzing, and we met Fiona, who was kind of gearing up for her race, and we were all just buzzing, bouncing off each other, and we were like, okay, we need to calm down. But yeah, it was just so much fun. And you know, it's kind of what it's all about, really, like, you know, although like, you know, rowing is kind of our job really at this stage, like we all love it, you know, but at the same time, you know, there is that pressure, and like you have that pressure on yourself, and you want to do well and stuff. But this was kind of just for fun, really, and it was just really nice to experience that, you know.
Oh my god, 100%. Like, I completely agree. Whenever I was competing, I'd always try and enter another event that like
it's competitive, but like the pressure's off. It's not that serious. I can enjoy it. And I think that's so important in sport, because like you start sport because you love it and you enjoy it. And you're a kid who's just enjoying being in the moment. And that kind of sometimes gets lost.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, when it does almost feel like your job, you know, you can lose that, you know what I mean? And it definitely is important to have those reminders, you know, that kind of way, and have that like fun element in it, and like sportsmanship and all that, you know, that kind of way. So yeah, it was a really nice reminder. So
oh, that's so sweet. So obviously the Irish rowing team is so competitive, like unbelievably competitive. You're always competing against each other to make teams and to get into the boats, but you seem like a really supportive group of people. Like, are you always cheering each other on the whole time, or is that kind of just what it looks like from the outside?
No, 100%. Like, it's just like, it's mad how much Irish rowing has lifted the last couple of years. Like, you know, everyone brings something different to the table, you know, that kind of way. And I think everyone is like open to helping each other out. And like, you know, there's always kind of a discussion that way between us all, like, but we all kind of really want to strive to be better together and individually. And it is just such a nice space to be in. Like, we're all really, really close. Like, and, you know, that kind of way, like, if there is such a good, like, team spirit and team environment, like, and it's just so nice just going training every day. Like, I just love it. Like, I just love going training every day. And I think that's what brought me back after Paris with lightweight being finished in the Olympics. And obviously I had to make the decision whether I was going to stay on and give heavyweight or open weight a go, or to kind of close the book or whatever, you know. But I think just like the gang, like the team, and I think that's what brought me back the most, like, you know, that kind of way, because medals are never a guarantee. So you have to enjoy the everyday. And I think with that team, like, I love it every day. And like, win or lose, like, good days, bad days, injuries, you know, like, you know, although people might think, like, obviously, like, the high performance team, you know, like, they must be so motivated every day. Like, we kind of bond over, like, oh God, we should go out in the water now, you know, that kind of way. And you know, it's just, you know, like, we're not, definitely not motivated absolutely every single day, you know, but I think just having a great team by your side goes a long way, you know. So yeah, it's a really, really nice space to be in, like, you know, as a team and as friends, but also like the success and, you know, what a, like, there's no better place really to be in when you have world medalists and Olympic medalists training beside you every day, you know. With such you don't have to look too far for inspiration, really, you know. And when it's your close friends, your best friends who have those medals, it's inspiring, but it almost makes you feel like it's possible too, you know, because we're all human at the end of the day, do you know what I mean? And you know, it's just like, it's just really nice. It's a really nice environment, so I feel really lucky to be part of it.
Oh my God, that's so lovely. It's literally like you're a family. Like, it's so nice, like, from the outside looking in and seeing like the progress that rowing has made in Ireland. But it's just so nice to know that you guys all really appreciate it. And you're all so aware of kind of the moment that you're in and kind of the change that you're making in terms of sport in Ireland. And I guess we kind of saw that with boxing when Katie Taylor was winning her medals, but that's essentially what you guys are doing in rowing. You're inspiring the next generation, and the fact that you're having so much fun with it as well is just so lovely to see.
100%. Like, I mean, you know, like I said, like medals are definitely not a guarantee, and it can't be your sole reason for why you want to do it, you know, that kind of way. So I think having that circle and people around you just makes it, you know, your kind of reason why, you know, that kind of way. But yeah, it's such a good space to be in. So
So you mentioned the women's lightweight double sculls no longer being in the Olympic program and having to transition into the open double sculls. What does that mean exactly for you, and in terms of the change in your training and your mindset?
Yeah, like it was actually a big change, to be honest. Like it's a different sport, really, to, like, you know, lightweight rowing to heavyweight rowing. We had to weigh in at 57 kg 2 hours before a race. So it meant that we had to like put bin bags to our skin, six layers of clothes nearly, and hop onto a bike and sweat down, and you know, so we could be that bit stronger, so we weren't kind of stepping onto the scales on weight. So it really was a different sport. You're kind of waking up and that's your focus, and then you shift your focus to racing. But I think it was just part of it, and it was kind of just part of the process. But having that not in the equation on race day, you know, it's definitely you know, you do feel that bit stronger, like, you know, it's like a new lease of life, you know, that kind of way. So although, like, you know, lightweight rowing was kind of taken from us as opposed to us like making that decision, it's kind of nice that the decision was made for us in a way, because like it is very hard every year to kind of, you know, although in the winter time we can be a little bit heavier, you know, gearing up for a regatta, like you do have to kind of watch your weight and start like maybe cutting a little bit if you need to. And yeah, it's just that like extra little bit of stress on your body, you know, when your body's already like under a lot of stress with training and stuff. But yeah, so it definitely is a big change, but a really positive change. And I think, you know, I suppose up until this year, like I feel like I've learned so much every year, and you think you're such an experienced athlete and stuff, but even learning from the girls, being in the boat, Zoe, like, you know, I feel like there's so many things that I didn't know, like even fueling your body, you know, we have so much support, but I think even just like learning from the girls and stuff this year has been huge, like, and I feel like I'm just excited because I don't really know where my body can take me yet, you know, and I feel like that extra bit of fueling and not having to weigh in on race day is gonna hopefully take me to another level, hopefully.
On the RTE Radio app, this is 2FM's Game On.
A brilliant chat there, Erling Keane, with Mags Cremin. You can hear that interview in full on the Game On podcast channels. Ellen, stepping aside from what she's achieved as an athlete, the medals, the championships, the work she's done, and in particular elite athletes, and you'd know from yourself from competing, the work Mags has done in particular for body positivity is just remarkable.
Yeah, she's so open and so willing to talk about her experience, and even in that interview there, talking about making weight and nearly the relief that she has felt not having to make weight anymore. Like, it just seems like such an aggressive thought to think of a small woman in rowing having to put bin bags on to make weight, and now she's talking about the joy she feels by being able to eat more, and
the freedom
and the energy that she feels, and the fact that she's so excited now to see where her body can take her, and just the positive way she's talking about her body and the openness she's showing with this new event that she's going for, and not being afraid of it as well. I think for someone to go from a lightweight event to then like open weight, which anything can happen there, it's so lovely to hear a female athlete talk so positively about food. And hopefully any young female athletes listening to this will be able to see Mags as a great role model, because that's exactly what she is.
Absolutely. Well, on that positive note, Ellen Keane, thank you so much for your company this evening. As I mentioned, that full interview with Mags Cremin is available on all of the Game On podcast channels. That is all we have time for this evening. Massive thank you for listening. Game On is back tomorrow at 6 p.m. here on 2FM. Bernard Jackman chats rugby. Jeff Shepherd has the latest NFL news, and will preview the Sports Direct Women's FEI Cup final between Bohemians and Athlone Town. Today's show was produced by Ronan Lawler. Our broadcast coordinator was Jarla Holland. Up next here on 2FM, the new music show with Beda Da Silva, not to be missed. So from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. We're going to take a short ad break. Beda's standing by, and we're going to check in with the news desk. Good luck.